Welcome to Voices in the Wilderness, conversations about church and leader health. Thank you so much for listening. We encourage you to keep the conversation going. Voices in the Wilderness is brought to you by Preparing for Amazement Ministries, where we empower and equip churches and leaders to create lasting and transformational health. Visit amazed15.org to learn more. We also welcome any comments or suggestions. Simply email us at podcast@amazed15.org. My name is Marcus Carlson, and today our guests are Chris Holder and Will Kemp. Welcome, Chris and Will.
Greetings.
Good to have you guys Hello. Both here. Yeah, so tell us a little bit about yourselves as well as one of the things that you work on together, Hug Your Cactus.
I'll go first. My name is Chris Holder. Will and I are both pastors in the DFW area. I serve a church in East Dallas, and it's a multi-ethnic congregation. So I really have a passion for helping churches do that. And we, for example, our particular congregation has worship in three different languages, and we're working to bring those three groups together in ministry. I also do some part-time work with you, Marcus, through Kairos, through Concordia University, through Lutheran House of Studies on pastor and church worker formation, on some creative ways of doing that, and I enjoy that as well. As far as the Hug Your Cactus goes, that's actually, I'm the one that kind of came up with the idea. It was given to me as advice from a friend who sent me. I was kind of wrestling with some of my own personal patterns of behavior, and a pastor friend from California said, literally, bro, you got to hug your cactus. And he sent me a link to this video by Robert Downey Jr. where he kind of unpacked some things about his relationship with Mel Gibson and how Mel had advised him about hugging the cactus as a way of kind of embracing the ugly parts of himself as to get through his addictions that were preventing him from working. They were just kind of unpacking his life. And that became such a powerful metaphor for me, you know, being from Texas, of course, you know, we got cactus everywhere, you know, and became a metaphor for my life. And it became instead of doing my doctoral thesis on ministry models and multi-ethnic ministries, I kind of realized through that process that God kind of hit me over the head and said, you don't need to be researching how to do those things. You need to be sorting yourself out. So I unpacked the Hug Your Cactus metaphor as my doctoral thesis, using Paul as the kind of example through the thorn of his flesh on the biblical. And then we'll talk about a little bit more about some of the traditions that Will and I have kind of been working on. And then Will came along about a year ago. I kind of realized with you know, having full-time ministry and doing work in the academic world that I couldn't develop this solely. So my life coach at the time said, you probably should get someone to help you. So I brought Will along. We did a couple of conferences together, and then we kind of been tag teaming ever since. And it's been a great partnership. So
awesome.
Yeah. And it's a surprise to none of us that actually know Chris that he needed to sort himself out, but,
amen. You know, but we all do, Will, just for the record.
Well, we all do. Me too.
And for the record, I have not sorted myself out yet. It's still a work in progress.
Yeah. Yes, we all are. We're all under renovation. But I agree with Taylor Swift. I'm the problem. It's me, right? Like, I get it. Me too.
Well, quoting T Swift, we're getting serious on the
podcast.
Oh,
you know. A little salty. I know she's all over the place on certain people, but I do like that song. But because it's like confession, right? But I don't know.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, and speaking of being self-aware and not self-aware, one of the things I realized that was so helpful for me with Hug Your Cactus was learning to just be aware of my own tendencies. One of the things we'll talk more about later. The part of the Hug Your Cactus journey that was most helpful for me was how we've started to unpack the Enneagram. And for me, I'm a 2, and a 2 needs to be needed, just like the you know, the song, I want you to want me, I need you to need me.
Boy, we're getting serious here. Yeah, this is good.
Oh,
music,
you know,
music, I love
all
it.
All kinds of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Don't quit your day job.
No. No, Jesus likes my singing. No one else does.
Yeah.
But I get that. I've realized more than anything that this journey for me is embracing the ugly part of my soul, is realizing I have like a savior complex, that I need to be needed. And mm-hmm. I have this idea that I'm the solution to everyone else's problems. They just need to listen to me. And the core sin of that is pride. And so as I've learned and grown as a pastor, I've had to learn that Jesus was not crazy when he asked a sick person, do you want to be made well? Because a lot of people are not ready to hug the cactus, are not ready to be mentally healthy. They like the chaos and toxicity and dysfunction. And so for me, it's been a huge learning moment, not just for my own personal journey, but helping others as well. It's made me a lot more patient and understanding, and I think just a better pastor overall. And so that's kind of how I journeyed into this as a pastor here in Allen, as a church planner in North Dallas. And it's just been a blast. I absolutely love working with Chris. He's just fun on wheels. So it's been quite fun.
Because he's a seven. We've had a and that's time. What they do.
Yes.
Yeah. We use the Enneagram a ton in our ministry. And one of there's a couple of reasons for that. I think as far as personality inventories go, it's the best tool out there. You know, for work, we like Working Genius, but what I love about both of those is they're about what's happening inside of you, not how you're operating and presenting externally. And the other thing I love about both of them is that they're simple, yet you can go super deep with them. And I think that that's what really makes them an asset for sure. When you guys
one thing I've learned on the Enneagram as well is that most personality profiles, even like Myers-Briggs and which are great, lean with your strengths, and the Enneagram really kind of leads with your brokenness and your how you are messed up, right? And it does talk about your strengths too, but it doesn't really lead with that. It leads with these are the ways you're likely to trip up. These are the ways you're likely to project unhealth onto the world. These are, like you said, the inner thing that's there, but then you're projecting this outer thing, this mask, this whatever, and the Enneagram exposes that first. It doesn't start with where you're strong. It starts with where you're broken.
And yeah, like a cactus, it hurts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ouchies.
And for us who talk a lot about health, like framing things in terms of health and unhealth, right? So I'm an right. eight, a challenger. And I remember, Chris, one time when we were out, you're like, hey, like, you know, you come across pretty confident. I'm like, well, you know, it's kind of a mask, right? And that's part of the eight. It's part of the eight, right?
Absolutely.
And you know, but it's funny because when an eight is unhealthy, they go to the worst of a five, which, like, you know, is what I do. I overthink everything. And when they're healthy, they go to the best of a two, which, you know, Will's a two, my son's a two, you know, and care for people. So that's been a very interesting thing for sure. You know, that self-knowledge piece is huge. As you think about all of that and the work you're doing with Hug Your Cactus and being pastors, obviously, Chris, a larger multicultural church, Will, a smaller church plant, kind of in the same general area. Why do you each think that leader health is important?
Well, Will and I, we're part of a planning a monthly group that does soul care for mission leaders kind of on the front lines, whether it be suburban church planters, which is more Will's context, or multi-ethnic kind of city, which is more my context. And we've seen just in our little tribe of the LCMS, three guys in the last couple of years burn out bad, and then try to take a sabbatical at the end of it when they're already done and end up leaving their church because of burnout. So we and these are guys we know, these are guys that we love, these guys that we care deeply about. And so that's brought in both of us, at least in me, a hyper awareness of it's a different ball game. Even since COVID and everything, it's a harder world for church workers. And there's a tendency to for people to isolate themselves, even the extroverted church workers, if they're not careful, or kind of just surround themselves with people that aren't necessarily have their best interest at heart, right? So, or your best friends or members of your church, so you don't really have any outlets. You know, you don't have people speaking hard truth in your life. So we've been involved with some prayer retreats for pastors and church workers in the area. But I feel like I see this hyper reality of church worker burnout. And I've been in it 25 years like I've never seen before.
Yeah, I agree with all of what you just said, for sure. Will, what about you? What do you think about, you know, the health, the importance of leader health, you know, in your experience?
Yeah, well, you know, the age old, put on your oxygen mask before you help the person next to you. I know it sounds cliche, but I can't, like, Chris and I, these are, like he was saying, these are like our best friends. Like, these are people we really like, and they're not putting on their oxygen mask at all. Like, they're just pouring out, and they're not filling up in any way, shape, or form. And it's not just the obvious, like, yeah, you should go pray, but it's the little things. Like, I play dumb beer league hockey. Chris plays, you know, pickleball and tennis and stuff. And, you know, like, you should have some healthy recreational, like, hobbies, not like the cliche worldly, like, oh, you know, spend a bunch of money, get your nails done, or spend a bunch of money on, you know, your hair, whatever. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's not self-care. Like real self-care or soul care, maybe more accurately. But things that rejuvenate you, bring you life, are you doing those? And do you have good friends that aren't impressed with you, that don't think you're awesome, that will call you on your stuff and are just going to be real with you in the good and the bad? Because I think too many people, because a lot of us are pretty good at what we do, they're impressed with us. And so they're afraid to say anything negative about us. And we sort of like it that way. If we're honest, right? Like, that feels good when people just tell us the pat on the back good stuff. And so it's not fun to surround you with guys that are willing to needle you a little and poke you a little. So I think that's the why, is we've gotten lazy. The seven deadly sin of sloth is not actually like vegging out on the couch. It's Dante talks about this a lot in Dante's Inferno, of it's a laziness of spirituality, of inviting not just the Spirit's active work in reading scripture or praying, but inviting brothers and sisters to like light you up on a regular basis. And if you don't do that, it's just inevitable. The fall is inevitable. Because we're all human. Like, pastors don't get to be exempt from our anthropology, right? Like,
right. Or sin.
Right? Or any, like, of it. Yeah.
I love that.
But a lot of the tip is, who pastors the pastor, right? Where does the pastor go for absolution? Where does the pastor go to receive spiritual care when they're, like my last year when my mom dies, or when life, you know, when one of the guys that we know, that a lot of his kind of unraveling came out of when he became an empty nester, and that, you know, he wasn't ready for it. Another guy, you know, had a daughter, had an eating disorder. The point is, like, it's when those life triggering events happen, who do we as pastors or as church leaders have to go to receive that care from? And if we don't have those relationships outside of our church, if we don't have fellow pastors or counselors or spiritual advisors, directors to go to, we're just gonna like just suck it. It's just gonna, we're gonna lose it all. It's just gonna, our life force is gonna get sucked out. You know, we gotta have.
Can I give a specific example of the positive?
Sure.
So this is just a random story. So a mutual friend of Chris and I's, the son of one of the pastors that just stepped down. So he's going through some stuff. And on top of that, he shared on social media, so I'm not breaking Matthew 18, but they just had a miscarriage and he's just going through it and it's rough. And I knew he needed something, and God just gave me an opportunity to take him to go see a Cowboys game with his dad. And, you know, the Cowboys are terrible, so it wasn't a good game. But it was a good time just to out, be with boys. And I was actually surprised, and he did something really interesting to me. Of, I noticed, because I didn't work at that church anymore, he was more honest with me because it cost him nothing. Like, yes, there are certain people you need outside of your circle that you don't have to look at the next staff meeting that you just shared some deep, dark stuff with, right? Like, you need a few people that are not in your, like, ministry circle, like, day-to-day ministry team, that you can be real with, and it won't cost you anything. So that's a big lesson I learned in that just interaction. I was like, oh, I'm actually better for him than most of his friends and peers and teammates, because it costs him way too much to share with them. And they want to just get the job done, and they don't even really want to hear him, because they're busy. And so I'm not busy. I'm just sitting there, you know, watching the game.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, I love the phrase you used earlier, Will. You know, we all need people in our life that are not impressed with us. And I'm going to latch on to that and steal and use that. But I mean, I think that's a good word. And part of the reason we, you know, as a ministry do our Pastors for Pastors initiative is pastors need pastors too. And I'm not just talking about ordained pastors, but people who work in churches and work in ministry. And I say all the time, like, we need somebody locally. You know, maybe it is somebody in our church, although it's really hard to trust, you know, somebody in your church to a full level. You know, we all need somebody, you know, that's not local. Maybe it's somebody from our tradition or denomination, maybe it's not. And then we all need a group of strangers, right? And so, like, that's part of, you know, what we do with Pastors for Pastors. It's like, none of these people really know each other, you know, going in. And, you know, we almost need all of those layers that, like, I need somebody here, you know, I'm helping a church in Michigan, you know, so I need somebody here that I can share a good bit with, but not fully. And, you know, I need, you know, somebody in my, you know, I've got people in my, you know, faith body that I can go to. And then, you know, you have a circle. And so, and we need to have all those layers, because leadership is hard, and certainly the stakes are high. But yeah, most people are pleasantly and unpleasantly surprised to learn that pastors and church workers are people too.
Right.
When you guys think about self-knowledge, we've talked a little bit about this, and obviously Hug Your Cactus is huge, a huge emphasis on self-knowledge, and we find it very important in our ministry. What role do you think, from your experience, self-knowledge plays in leader health?
Yeah, I think the key to that is being self-aware, right? And I think that's where, like, the Enneagram, knowing your type, right? Knowing your tendencies. And we as a staff, and I've also used the Working Genius, but knowing your tendencies, knowing your strengths and your weaknesses, and how you tend to get, you know, caught offside. So that if you know it, and if you're self-aware, when someone calls you on it, you're not as offended, right? Because, and especially if you've given people permission, like, hey, you have permission to call me out when I am this way. I mean, one of the parts of the speech and the Cactus Journey is to take personal responsibility for wrongdoings, right? Well, you got to be pretty self-aware to do that in a well, or even in the, you know, in the 12 steps, it talks about the making an inventory. But you, in order to really do that well, you've got to have a high level of self-knowledge, self-awareness. And also, again, because one of the things that we talk about a lot in the Hug Your Cactus Journey and on our own, you know, platforms that we use, is it's not self-care, it's care and community. There is a self component to it. There is a, you know, we talk about the tradition of contemplative prayer. There is getting away by yourself and processing, but still, I think self, you know, help is kind of an illusion. You can't be healed outside of community. And I think that's, so self-awareness, if you're super self-aware, you realize I need that community. I need that. But so I think a lack of self-awareness, a lot, you know, in one of the books I read for my doctoral thesis talks, they calls it the illusion, or it calls the glittering image, or the false self, or whatever that is. If you're not self-aware, and if you don't have people that are speaking into your lack of self-awareness, that mask, that glittering image, that false sense of self will overwhelm.
For sure.
Yeah, it'll blow up in your face. Yeah, so 12 steps, I we've been hinting at it. I'll hit it a little more directly. The phrase that always comes out to me is a fearless and searching moral inventory. And man, that's scary. Like to really go deep, to like to face the deepest, darkest parts of yourself, the whys, not just the stuff you do wrong, but why do you do it? Right? Like not just why did I drink? You know, drinking's not the problem, it's a bad solution, right? Like that, you know, we talked about the recent country song that talks about that, right? And I think more than anything, the beauty of the 12 steps is you don't do that by yourself, that you do it with your sponsor. And I recently was talking with somebody in recovery, and he says he calls sponsors that are really good at like calling you out on your stuff, they call them black belt sponsors. And I love
that's great.
Of like, I love that's that great. Of like people that I've done it for so long that they cut to the chase like right away, and they don't wait around, they don't dick around, like they just get to the chase and just like call people on their stuff right away. And so I think that is why the 12 steps work. Is if you had to do that by yourself, you just like go into a deep pit of despair. But if you did it with a brother who then after you finish it is going to give you absolution, then I think you can have some hope. And so I think Chris is absolutely right. You have to do it in community, and you got to do it with people that have been there before, that have been in the ditch, have been in the pit, and know the way out.
And you've touched on this, Marcus. You know, pastors can be some of the least self-aware people in the world, because we
yes, people, that keeps me quite busy, actually.
No, and because the reality is, we hear a lot of how we're great, and then we hear a lot of how we suck, and we don't hear a lot of just the we're just a normal person, right? And depending on how we're wired, right, we receive those, especially a 2, a 7, not as much. A 7s and 8s, we're a little more Teflon about those things, but. No, we can very much, especially if we're in a context where we're hearing mostly positive, we can start to believe the hype. We can start to believe we're invincible. We can start to believe that, you know, how many pastors, especially big church pastors, have failed in the last 3, 4, 5 years because they started to believe the hype and they didn't have any accountability. But it doesn't happen just in big churches. I mean, the situations we're talking about are churches that are much smaller here locally. So the point is, you've self-awareness, and again, you can't be self-aware alone. You've got to have people
right
pointing out, like, no, you're full of shit, you know. You're
Yeah, and I love that, like black belt and sponsor. When I was in high school, like I'm an 8, so I'm a challenger, and this is always who I've been. I didn't know what that it was back then, but you know, in my, you know, early Christian days and in my youth group type circle, it was Young Life. They, you know, when I would kind of be blunt with somebody, I had a friend that called them Marcus Talks, right? So shout out to Megan. You know, like it became this thing in high school. It's like, oh, it's time for somebody to have a Marcus Talk, right? And I started to believe that hype too, by the way. And then, you know, all of a sudden realized not everybody wanted one of those. Especially right. Marcus. Especially Marcus didn't want one of those for Marcus, yeah. Right? Yeah. And so, and like figuring out how to do all of that. And I do think, you know, ironically, the professionalization of ministry has caused us to put, you know, people on a pedestal, and nobody can live up to that. And I think that's really difficult. And pastors don't feel safe to be human, but they need to be safe to be human, because I think ministry is certainly harder it's ever been, certainly in the United States. When you guys think about, like, you know, as pastors and you know, going through some of this stuff, working with other pastors who have gone through this stuff, what has all of this taught you about church health? You know, we talk a lot about leader health, but we also talk about church health. So what is this, Will, why don't you kick us off? What has all of this taught you about church health?
Well, the first thing is how I view my church. So Eugene Peterson, I know Chris thinks he's not as big of a fan as I am.
That's all right. Chris can be wrong. That's fine.
He can be wrong. That's fine. He writes in The Pastor that we do our church a great disservice when we see them as problems to be fixed instead of sinners in need of forgiveness. because psychologists view people as problems to be fixed. But as church leaders, we need to view them as sinners in need of grace. And that has to be our starting place. And the Enneagrams actually help me a lot with that. Like, I've had some leaders that are like you, Marcus, eights. And they can be a little annoying to a two like me. But they don't annoy me as much now because I'm like, ah, he's just being an eight. It's fine. Like, I just move on.
Right.
And I don't have to, like, shame it or get mad or treat them weird. And I model that, too. And I think churches get healthier when you, like, you don't, like, let them get away with the knucklehead stuff. But when they're just being a little abrasive and it's not the worst thing in the world, like, we don't have to fight about everything. And so you just give people permission to be who they are. You surround them with people that are going to balance them out. And so I'm not good at detail stuff. So one of my primary staff persons, she is detail stuff. And she does like 80% of that. And when she tells me to do something, I put down my ego, even though I'm the leader, I let her tell me what to do because I know she has like a system and I don't.
Right.
And if I don't follow some system, I'm never going to get anything done. And so because of the Enneagram, it teaches me to be humble, not just about other people and not be judgmental about them, but be curious. But it also teaches me to be more curious about myself and my own agenda and not just hold on to things so tightly. And I try to model that for our people. I use the language of prototype a lot. Like, we're just going to try this thing. And if it works great, awesome. We'll turn it into a thing. And if it fails, who cares? It was a prototype. And so we try not to hold on too tightly to things because I think a lot of times we can overinvest in an idea or a ministry or even just a staff leader or a volunteer leader. And when it blows up, we get mad and offended. And that anger is actually exposing, when we hug our cactus, all the ugly, dark parts of ourselves that we don't want to talk about. The deepest part of not just leader health, but church health is learning to be like Jesus and ask, why are you angry? Right? Like with Jonah in Jonah 4, I think about that passage all the time. Anytime I'm being cheeky or petty or whatever, I make myself read Jonah 4 where God asks, do you do well to be angry when you lose the little shade plant and you're a little hot? Like, really? Like, really? So that's kind of where I go. With those kinds of things I do it myself first and I model it, but then I challenge my people to have a sense of humor about yourself. I think that's a big problem in our world today is
especially in the church. We don't laugh. We don't experience joy. Yeah. No. And the language I use is experiment. I love prototype too, but right. Like,
yeah,
you know, everything's an experiment, even if we've been doing it for 100 years. For sure. Chris, we've got a couple minutes left. Any thoughts for you in terms of like what you've learned about church health as you've been on this journey?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's as many unhealthy churches as there are unhealthy pastors. And sometimes you get the both together. And you and I both have kind of had to clean up messes after in these environments and then the work we've done. I feel like system theory is so important in this and understanding a church as a system. And I think
as a family system, even.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Family systems. I think about like my church has been around 70 years and the community around it has changed drastically in those 70 years. And so doing things like taking on new ministries, like multi-ethnic ministry and taking on some of the things we've had, you've got to get buy-in and you got to know and I think that, you know, you talked about the working genius. We just went through a pretty significant reshuffling of staff roles and didn't really change any staff. We added a part-time person, but other than that, we didn't really, but we did a significant changing of roles and we realigned roles with giftedness and we used the working genius to help us do that. And it was, you know, it created some angst, but now we're like, we had a voters meeting yesterday and like our budget, our ministry plan, everything got passed without a lot of conversation. It wasn't because people were indifferent, because they have a high level of trust and me and the council and the leadership. But you gotta realize I work with three significant teams. Like I have my staff team. We have our council, which is, you know, handles the business side of the church. And then we have our spiritual leadership team, which is like our equivalent of an elders. Those are three unique different teams. And I have a different role in each of those teams. and I have to recognize what are the needs and what baggage and what each of those teams need from me. But then also, how do I empower those teams so this is not the Chris show, right? So I feel like you got to know your people, and you got to know your key leaders, and you got to work, like you said, systems. And each of those is like a little mini family. And you've got to, so learning about system theory, applying the cactus, applying the Enneagram, applying the, like you talk about, Will, like knowing the types or the tendencies of your group and the working genius, you know, it's one thing that makes it so hard is just people are more complex and systems are more complex and people bring their baggage to it. They bring their fears. They bring all that stuff.
Especially in the church.
Yes.
Yeah. And just one quick add, because you were hinting, and I want to just kind of hit it right on the head of just know your church's season. That's something I'm really learning right now of, like, it's weird, but like churches almost literally follow like literal human growth, like curve almost, right?
Yes.
Like like a early church, it's like a baby and you're like picking up after it and it's messy, you know. Middle church, like they're trying to find themselves, differentiate themselves from whoever launched them. Then you go through the angsty teenage, things get messy and you got to kind of start over again. Our church is kind of transitioning. We've been around a decade, but we are still a relatively small church plant. And I'm getting kind of blunt with our people, like, it's time for us to put on our big boy pants, right? Like, that's our season, right? And I as a two, that's not natural for me to say, but I in my brain, I've learned because of the Enneagram, I just pretend I'm Marcus and an eight. And I go into the meeting, I'm like, I'm Marcus, I'm an eight, I'm going to this meeting, and I don't care what they think. Like, they need to put on their big boy pants, and we got to, like, have a real budget. Like, we got to stop doing this church planner budget. We need a real, like, we've been around 10 years. We need to stop this nonsense, right? Like, that's the thing. Like, know your church's season and help them grow into the next season. Because I think too often we live in denial, not only of ourselves as individuals, but we live in a denial of, like, where are we at as a community, and where is God calling us to grow into that next step? Because we get really comfortable and we plateau, and it's so easy to be happy with the status quo. And I think that's why the church, even though, you know, the church kills prophets, we need prophetic people like Marcus and Chris that are willing to say hard things and don't really care what happens afterwards, right? We need those people. Instead of killing them, we should and excommunicating them and pushing away. We need more people that are willing to tell us the hard things. And then I can be the pastoral, come in the back end and say, well, what Chris meant to say is, you know, and all of that. But and comfort people, right?
But. Yeah, that's what my wife is for. Gosh, guys, we could talk about this all day. And I want to be sensitive to time for you, for me, for the listeners. But let's do this again, because this was an awesome conversation, and appreciate
a lot of fun.
Appreciate both of you taking the time today.
Thanks, Marcus.
Cool. Well, and join us if they're interested. HugYourCactus.com.
Yep.
We just updated the website. We have a YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, X, all the things now. So just search for us online. You'll find us.
Yeah, and we'd love to get you guys kind of officially on our site as a partner as well. So we'll figure that out here in the midst of the chaos of the holidays. But appreciate both of you and appreciate your time today.
Thanks, Mark. Right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much for listening. Voices in the Wilderness is brought to you by Preparing for Amazement Ministries, where we empower and equip churches and leaders to create lasting and transformational health. Visit amazed15.org to learn more. We welcome any comments or any suggestions. Simply email us at podcast@amazed15.org.